Welcome in, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this new episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. In this special episode, we welcome in
Dean Hoag.
Dean is a dedicated and hardworking individual with a diverse background. As a former family restaurant owner, he understands the value of hospitality and creating memorable experiences. For the past 25 years, serving as the facilities director for an agency that houses people with developmental disabilities, Dean finds fulfillment in contributing to the well-being of others. In his personal life, he proudly embraces the roles of a father to two and stepfather to three. Family is at the core of who he is, and his commitment to their happiness is unwavering. Alongside his current marriage, he cherishes the joys and challenges of blended family life. Outside of work, he finds solace and joy in vacationing. Any destination with beaches, water, and sunshine is his ideal retreat. These moments of relaxation fuel his motivation for the demanding work he undertakes. In essence, Dean is a multifaceted individual with a passion for both professional excellence and enriching personal connections. Dean, brother, it's an honor and a privilege to have you on the show, man. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, man, it's an honor to be here.
Dean, and yeah, man, it's you're a trailblazer for so many. You're number five of what I'm calling the Marriage Transformation Heroes series. So just to get it explicit to guys listening in at the start, Dean has been part of Heroic Husbands Men's Circles. Dean, I didn't actually formally check, but it's like you've done just, I think it's seven meetings at this point, or seven, maximum eight meetings.
Yeah, seven, correct.
Yeah. So like I lead Dean, like, I mean, it's fucking, I remember how nervous I was for the first podcast episode I did, guesting on a show. Man, I was like fucking 2 weeks preparing myself. I was already coaching and held notes, man. You're coming on like after just seven or eight meetings in Heroic Husbands Men's Circles. It's like ridiculously early in your journey. So I just want to like open-heartedly like just say and acknowledge you front end for the amount of courage to just fucking say, yeah, man, let's fucking do it.
Hey, man, whatever I can do to help myself and help others, man, I'm in.
Second of all, will lead. I was reading your bio and I'm thinking, fuck, Dean, you're breaking my heart, man, because like vacationing, any place that has beaches, well, Ireland ticks that. Water, we're a fucking island, so we tick that. Man, sunshine, I don't know. Am I ever going to get your brotherly ass over to visit me? Can I work? Can I work with taking the first two criteria and have some hope of getting you over to me?
Damn right, man. It's definitely on our bucket list to get over to Ireland.
Well, if you look at like the photos of what do you call it, the Tourism Ireland, whatever board, man, there's plenty of sunshine there. They don't fucking tell people how much it rains. Dean, jumping in, like the curiosity of mine with any man is, yeah, we will jump into, you know, your work within Heroic Husbands Men's Circles. But what I'm curious now is, you know, what's the backstory to Dean as a man? Like when you look back, mainly sort of what I'm looking for here is, you know, early childhood. How is that childhood? Because, you know, we tend to avoid this as men. It's like, I am who I fucking am. You know, it's like, you know, I know who I am. And because that vulnerable underbelly of looking back and going, yeah, actually, I am who I am because there were certain dominoes of key experiences that I went through that forms the foundation of who you are as a man now and who you are, I suppose, specifically within the context of this conversation, Dean, you know, the man who Dean shows up in marriage as being. That man particularly. What are some of the dominoes of experiences that you had or maybe even didn't have, Dean, growing up that has made you the man that has been showing up in marriage?
So it's kind of ironic that you know, you say that I'm your number five podcast, because I'm number five in the family. I had two older siblings and two twin sisters. And a little bit of the family dynamic, my oldest brother's 10 years older than me, then five, then my sister's four. So I came trailing along in the end. Mom will always put the joke out there that I was an oops baby. So, they finally got it right, and that's when they decided to quit, I guess. But with that, the family dynamic, my brother shared a room together, my sister shared a room together, and then there was me. And I don't know, it took a while in life to realize how that really puts you in the situation that you are in life, I guess. My brothers had each other to always be there for. My sisters, especially being twins, always had someone there. And I was kind of the lone wolf. And, don't get me wrong, we all still get together great. We love each other. And, we had a very good family dynamic. But as we're older and we discuss things now, the light bulbs go off like, wow, we lived in the same house with the same parents and lived five different lives. Recently my father passed a year ago, and it just brings up a lot of different conversations about life and growing up. And, several times my brother had been like, wow, I didn't know that, or I didn't know that, or, you think your relationship is exactly the same as everyone else in your family. And it really wasn't. We all lived totally separate lives. And I think being the youngest, my dad was self-employed. My brothers being older worked with him sooner. And I was under my mom's wing. So I kind of got pulled along with the girls and Girl Scouts and, my mom's singing group and all that. And she just always tried to direct me not to be like my dad. Not that he was a bad guy. He was self-employed. He worked hard. He provided for us. whatever their dynamic was, she just wanted me to be different. And it probably caused a little resentment between me and my dad, unknowingly, but it happens. And there was a time that, I just totally resented him. And a lot of that was, what I struggled with and realized doesn't work in a marriage. I blamed him for everything I couldn't do. I suck at sports. That was his fault. He didn't throw the ball with me in the backyard. I couldn't do this. That was his fault. And I don't know, someday the light bulb went off and I realized that he could have thrown the ball at me every day and it still would have hit me in the head. I just suck at sports. There's no way it would have changed. It's not what I was put on this earth for. So then I started realizing, that it's not him, it's me. If I want to learn something, if I want to do something, I got to do it. And, my background is hands-on kind of maintenance, restaurant, and that's all from dad and mom. They gave us those skills. So once I started realizing that, hell, I'm not this, but I'm this, I started losing that resentment. And, that light bulb started going off in this work. Because that was the road I was going down, the blame everyone else for what's not right for me. And, that was a big thing, coming around from that. And I still do it at times. I mean, definitely not perfect. The blame game's still out there, but the awareness of it has changed a little bit. So that's pretty much my background and getting to the point that I'm at here, I guess.
Yeah, it's immense. Well, I'll right off the back of that, the blame game. My fucking mind brings up blame all the time. You know, I say that to you guys, but I say it again and again here. It's like it's not that that pathway is not there in my mind. It's just getting to learn that, okay, I'm not going to fucking let that blame thought or thoughts take over my tongue and take over my actions. So, but I when I was listening to you, Dean, you know, about that, that dynamic, boy, I was resonating so deeply. You know, maybe different numbers in the family, but it was like two older brothers. I was the youngest of the boys and I had my sister underneath that, but it was like a lot of that feminine energy. And my dad was working as a cop. So it was that classic thing that is just, you witness it time and time and time again. It's almost omnipresent in men's work where, yeah, when you look back, it's like so often there's a lack of that masculine energy, you know, where, you know, what you're saying is like two older brothers had a lot of the masculine energy off with dad way more and you were the feminine energy. And I can resonate myself, this sort of like a unwitting, there's tons of fucking love at home, like, you know, as you were saying, like beautiful family dynamics in many ways, but unwitting, like villainizing of masculinity. I definitely would look back and go, yeah, my nervous system learned is like, that's what he does. I'm meant to do something different. And a lot of my work has been reclaiming. Actually, that was beautiful. That those masculine parts are beautiful and what that means. That brought a lot of emotional baggage in, where I know with Matilda, she was like thinking, I was taking things of fucking rejection 24/7, actually. I thought she was rejecting me 24/7. And yet I now look and go, Mark, you were subconsciously rejecting your own places, your own masculinity.
Yeah.
Does that, what lights up in you when you say, like, in this inner world, you know, within your own mind, within your own nervous system, you unconsciously rejecting your own masculinity?
100%. And, you know, and I'm still pretty good at it. I can conjure up in my mind the outcome and be pissed off before it even starts. And, you know, then you get into it and it's not the outcome at all. You know, it's what we put in our mind and think is going to happen. Now, all of a sudden, you actually get the balls to talk about it and sit down face to face and realize, like, wow, this person on the other side's not judging me. She's here for me. You know, I always used to think early on that, you know, you're trying to change me. And screw that, man. I am who I am. I'm a good guy. There's no reason. I do this, this, and this. And I had that, you know, wall built up that you're not going to change me. Until I finally started realizing, you know, you're not changing me or help identify and make me better at what I am. And you're just trying to open my eyes to stuff that I don't see. So, yeah, any of that talk or whatever would just cause this resentment in me and I'd stop listening. I'd, you know, put up that wall and it was kind of my way or the highway. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think a lot of that goes back to, you know, when I was young and, you know, if I wasn't heard, if I wasn't this, you know, I had to make sure people knew I was heard.
Mm. Yeah, I love how you're already actually bringing in the conscious aspects of that. You know, if it's on you, it's all on you, it's all in your mind and my mind in my relationship, it's all in my mind and by extension guys listening in. However, Dean, can you take the guys back, take me back into the story of, you know, how your mind was working before coming to this work, before Heroic Husbands, you know, and all the beautiful stuff we'll speak about that, like second half, you know, just what the support of other conscious men, regular dudes doing irregularly deep inner work, what that has brought to your life and to your inner world game. Tell us the story of how your mind was showing up in relationship before entering this work, that sort of hard side, that sort of my way or the highway type mentality. What did that look like? What did that feel like?
So basically what it was, you know, I'm a doer, and I would do everything. I would cut the lawn, I would clean the house, I would cook the dinner, I would do this, I would do that, everything. And that, I thought, showed that, you know, I'm doing, so therefore you must love me. And I always had that feeling that, you know, I'm doing so much and not getting appreciated for it. I did this, didn't get appreciated for it. You know, the simple, like, oh, yeah, you know, the lawn looks nice, or this, that, and the other thing. And I struggled so much with, you know, doing and not getting. And Maria, we've been together, it's going on 9 years. And she is definitely someone that will bring out the best in me, because she's not afraid to bring up a topic. So, you know, we would have arguments and fights, and it would just always go wrong because I would always try to prove a point. You know, she said this, I would take it the wrong way. And then, well, of course, you know, well, you do this, this, and this. And I remember in our first call together, you know, you stopped me. You're like, all right, you know, Dean, let's stop blaming Maria and tell me what you're really feeling. And that was it. That was me. I was just, you know, I was the perfect little boy. And, you know, mom always coddled me, took care of me. And, you know, I'm not getting that, so I'm going to make you suffer, basically. I would shut down. I used to think, you know, being able to hold a grudge was a great challenge. I could hold a grudge for days, weeks, you name it. I could make you like you don't even exist in a room. And it really hurt. It wasn't something that made me feel better, but there was just that stubbornness there that you're going to turn and understand that I'm right, or it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I can feel the grief in myself, you know, when you bring that point up, and it's such a fucking common experience within men, you know, where we don't, I know when I look back, Dean, when I didn't have the tools, just didn't have the tools to do deep intimacy, to feel into emotions. And yeah, those moments when I was like, you're attacking me, or I was perceiving my queen was attacking me. You're attacking me. You're belittling me. You're shaming me. You don't appreciate anything. Boom. The stone wall would be built. And yeah, it's like you're, my perceptual reality, get that, like I would actually say every single guy has some version of this, of you're causing me so much pain, woman, I'm going to inflict this upon you. I had a beautiful you actually, I think it was yourself in one of the chats and in the private chat, said Fish Gill, one of the episodes before Christmas. At the time of recording, Fish Gill talking about the conflict resolution made simple. But Fish said to me, he was like, I was really curious about it, because I had done that thing, Dean, like so often, as you say, it's like this sort of I'll inflict pain on you. Like, it was like, why? I was like, Fish, why do we do that? And he's like, Mark, it's our last ditch attempt to try and get the person that we love to attune to how much pain we're suffering. I actually felt a lot of validations in that because I thought, man, you've been such a fucking cunt to your queen. I really thought looking back on, man, it's fucking hard pill to swallow to go, how much of a fucking bastard I was. A part of me was. I've been trying to tidy up the language of how I relate. It's like, it's a part of you. It's a shadow part. But by and large, Dino was like, Mark, you're just a fucking asshole with Matilda. Like for 12 years, fuck the amount of pain. But how does that line in with your experience looking back of, you know, the part of you that was just inflicting the pain, but actually deep down subconsciously seeking, you know, some version of, do you understand how much this is challenging me? Does that make sense for you, Dean?
Yeah, totally. And if you go back to the family dynamic on it again, and once again, like you said, not having the tools, you know, we weren't taught how to deal with our emotions. I used to joke that when we were born, we got this little box and our parents told us, you know, whatever emotions you're feeling, put in that box and hide it deep in the caverns of your room and never go in there. So, you know, four siblings, how did we communicate? We fought, we yelled, we called names, we walked away. You come back the next day and it was all done and over. You know, everyone was happy again. That was the training that I had. So now why can't I get into a relationship and yell, scream, and say what I feel? And, you know, tomorrow walk back and, you know, it's all done. I said what I had to say. You know, why is there still hurt feelings? Why, you know? So being taught to do something one way that worked for your whole childhood, and now being in a relationship with someone, especially someone who's so emotionally connected, you know, dealing with that and dealing with emotions and, you know, getting it out or talking about it or actually just feeling it, I think is the hardest part of all of it because, you know, if I feel it, I'm weak. So you got to keep that I'm a tough guy attitude. So I can't feel that stuff. So yeah, that's kind of where that's at.
Yeah. Like what a fucking tragedy in modern society. Cause again, you know, it's your unique descriptions of your inner world experience, yet that's omnipresent. I have not met one man in marriage. I have not met one man in life that does not have a distinct challenge with that. You know, if you're feeling emotions, you are weak. What a right. tragedy. Because it's like, yeah, like, you know, emotion is the flavor of life. It's like the whole tapestry is like, I don't know, the metaphor of like, it's the paint that the artist has. It's like, if you have access to all the paints, well, then you've got the full creative expression. But if you have like, what? You're meant to be happy, you're meant to be confident, that's fucking it. Like, you can't create art. You actually just can't do it. I remember that one moment in the call with you, that first call, and man, like, I can spot it because it's just so autobiographical for me. But there was that moment, like you mentioned, it's like, oh, Dean, hey man, you know, stop blaming Maria. Just get real. What are the emotions? And I remember that moment so autobiographical for me. But it's like you had that one sentence. Oh, I feel this, this, this. And then your mind raced to somewhere else. It's like, hey, whoa, whoa, whoa. Come back. And I bring this up now because I'm like, boy, that just was fucking me coming to men's work. It's like that thing, that belief of, you know, boys. That's the initial conditioning. Boys don't cry. Boys don't feel that shit. You don't cry. You don't feel. You're never vulnerable. Never be vulnerable. Don't fucking tell anybody what you're feeling on the inside because you'd be laughed at. You'd be jeered at. You'd be bullied. You'd be told, you know, you're a pussy. You're a girl, etc., etc., etc. It's just that immensity. That immensity of merely mentioning and then feeling to have to run from it. I could so resonate with that part of your expression of I'm feeling this, this, and this, but help me get the fuck out of this. This sentence has just like sliced me to my core. I've no more armor. How was that moment? Can you actually bring yourself back to that moment if you don't mind? This is like, because again, this is for every single guy. There's not one guy listening in that this is not relevant for. What was happening in that moment when I just went, okay, take the blame off. So there's one, there's like one major armor is gone. Oh fuck, I can't blame her anymore. This dude isn't going to let me blame. So okay, one major chunk of my armor and my arsenal is gone. And then you speak to emotions and another part tries to race away from it and I bring you back. Do you remember that moment, Dean, and like just what was happening in your nervous system and it was like, fuck, I'm here to feel emotions.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, for one, Mark's an asshole because he won't listen to me, bitch, man. I want a bitch. And I think that's what's so amazing about all of this because it brings light to the fact of, stop blaming and start feeling. And it just really opened my eyes. And that's one thing I go back to a lot is that conversation with you. Stop blaming and how do you feel? That's not the point. It doesn't matter how I feel. It's what she did. It's so easy to go there, but it's so hard to sit and tell you how I feel. But so important. And like that's why that conversation came up this morning. I go to that every time. I can see your face sitting there and looking at me and being like, okay, Dean, come back and tell me how you're feeling about that. And it's brutal. It's tough, man. But once you get inside there and start feeling it, it's so much easier to deal with the next time.
Well, I'm learning here, Dean, because I've got to like have some legal fucking thing that you guys signed before. You can't be fucking saying Mark's an asshole, dude. That's this is being recorded. This is like I'm wanting guys to listen in and be open to coming on here because it's men's circle. You're here fucking he's a fucking asshole.
It's true brotherly love, man, because if you know how many times I called my brother an asshole, and I love him, so and that's another thing. It's funny that you bring that up because that was something else that I used to think was, good. If I could kid with you, if I could call you an asshole, or I could, that meant I felt confident enough with our relationship, but that also didn't work with my wife.
Yeah.
It's, we're taught to talk and get together one way. And of course, that's camaraderie between guys. If I throw in a little, he's an asshole, it's gonna break that feeling that he's trying to get out in me. So you're an asshole in the best kind of way, Mark.
I'm an open-hearted asshole.
There you go.
I'm happy you're actually calling me an asshole. There's a lot of humor, but like it is that thing. It's like this rule set that works between guys. And that's like a really potent example. It's a beautiful coming up in humor, but it's like very sincere. We end up with those tools where like I don't want to speak about what's happened, well, it's you and I relating together, but it was like just the last meeting we had. You shared a certain part. You were talking about the shadow, that part of your mind. It was like, man, that's one rancid fucking son of a bitch, that part of you when you show up. And like, we're there laughing as brothers. I've had this at me. It's like, it's a brotherly love. It's like, with love, I love you. And it's also true that part of you is a fucking asshole. Or, Mark, I love you. But I would like, that's masculine to masculine. That's like the masculine grows by challenge, the feminine grows by appreciation. Two entirely different fucking realms.
Right.
What my curiosity leads me because into the emotional realm. So you came into the work, Dean, with was it like 5+ decades of, nervous system conditioning saying, avoid emotion. Don't fucking go there. It's weak. Blame whore. within a nanosecond of you feeling any trigger type emotion, and I'm speaking like mechanistically about you, but it's like referring to 99% of guys listening in, and the 1% are just self-delusional. It's that nanosecond triggering off, I'm feeling this, you're causing it, fuck you, bitch. Ultimately, like just getting like real, that rancid, that part of us that's just really out to protect us at all costs, that part that, you know, you developed, my nervous system developed, guys listening in developed back when we're younger. Blaming is much easier than feeling into the emotions. What has been your process in such a short period of time? Like, you're coming on the podcast, you're now talking about it, like it's after 7 meetings. What is it, like 2.25 months of time? What has been your journey with actually softening into that? What has allowed you do that? Yeah, I'm just trying to prize out for guys listening in that would still have the, I'm not fucking doing it. Mark is an asshole. I don't want to do that fucking shit. You know, like maybe Dean, like, what has been your personal process with softening into that approach, leaning in?
So I really have to say, is meeting in the men's group and seeing, so in our group, there's 4 other guys. Age range from their 30s to me in my late 50s. And hearing the words come out of their mouth are the same words that would come out of my mouth. We're in different areas of the world. But we're all the same. And it blows my mind, like, every time that not one of us ever once said, oh, that's odd, I've never really felt that. Everything that we talk about is always, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I feel the same way with that. So I think knowing that I'm not the only one dealing with this, and I mean, that's how it always used to be. It's like, I'm the only one with this issue. I'm the only one that can't do that. What's wrong with me? You know, that whole self-blame thing, I'm really good at that. And I think that broke that, which then in turn let me stop blaming more, because I'm human. I'm okay. I'm feeling these same emotions that, you know, the other guys are feeling. So it's normal. I'm not this oddity. And with that, you know, it just allowed me to, and believe me, I'll still blame. I'm pretty good at that. But that's going to be years of, you know, reconditioning my mind, because none of us are perfect. None of us are human. And, you know, it just made me really realize that, wow, I'm not alone in this, and it's okay to feel this way, and I'm not weak because I'm doing it. And it's just in the back of my mind now when I have a confrontation or whatever, to, I always say to myself, what is this making me feel like, instead of what is she doing that made me feel like this?
That's massive. It really speaks to, I have the distinction that I would speak to in the podcast and one-on-one coaching and in the circles of cause versus reveal. You're finding your beautiful words to that, because like the cause paradigm is, she said it, she said or done, or not said or not done, both can be triggering. And I'm feeling this, so she has caused it. Whatever she has said or done, not said, not done, has caused me, because clearly cause and effect. If she did it, said it, I'm feeling it, it must have been caused, when in actual fact, it's like, no, that has triggered and has revealed. You know, your queen, my queen, that was my biggest point. This has been the biggest revelation in my, call it awakening, call it just fucking turning my marriage around. The biggest one for sure, like when my queen when we talk now, she still triggers me. Every day, in many ways, every now and then, in fucking mega ways, where a tsunami of shit, like the shitstorm comes up, where like blame, I'd say it to you guys, like parts of my mind, Dean, where, man, my rancid bastard part, you know, that I was calling you on, my rancid bastard part, that shadowy part, that sort of like, you know, a childhood of undealt with wounds, of not feeling seen, heard, or safe in childhood, and all that fucking mangled, you know, psychotherapeutic fucking pile of muck. When that comes up, boy, that part can go to jump out of marriage. That part of my mind. Yeah. Oh, man, it's just nanosecond. And like, it can get to the point where I can, there are times. It's not as often now, but there are times when I just say, it's like to my queen, it's like, I just really can't, there's nothing safe coming through my mind now. I've got to go out. I'm going to go out, feed the horses. That's like 15, 20 minutes of me just out in the air and breathing. And it's like 10 or 15 minutes of just rancid shit coming through my mind. I'm not feeding it, but it's like, boy, this is fucking red hot shit. And like literally, thoughts like, what the fuck did you create this whole fucking movement for? Your entire fucking income. You can't leave at this point. You've built your own fucking prison, you fucking asshole. You're so fucking stupid. It's like, she has you by the balls now because she fucking knows you're working. You're telling the world, you know, it's like everything. You're doomed. I have been like witnessing going, wow, this part of my mind. But it's that cause versus reveal. It just reveals an undealt with hurt that is softening in time. What has that part, in your own beautiful words that led me, I have that distinction, but what has that part of you, this inner world clarity, Dean, brought, where you can distinguish, okay, she's not causing me this, but this is me, this is my mind, you know, what has that brought to your capacity to show up and hold space with Maria and be, you know, emotionally, psychologically safer around her?
You know, and, you know, you say safe. When I used to have discussions with Maria and I would get heated or shut down, she always told me she didn't feel safe. And, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, like, I don't have a gun to your head. I've never threatened you. I've never punched you. I mean, what do you mean you don't feel safe? And that used to get me even more aggravated because, you know, I'm a good guy. But with all of this and what you were saying is, I get what she meant by she doesn't feel safe. She can't tell me this, and this without me exploding. And that's where she doesn't feel safe, that I can't communicate back in a way. So yeah, she didn't feel threatened that I was going to kill her in her sleep, but she was scared of my reaction. So we could never have a conversation because she would just avoid it at that point, so I wouldn't blow up. So with this, you know, I can see now, and you know, I had a conversation with her once and she goes, you honestly have to think that much every time you do this, and this. And I'm like, you don't know. Yeah, I have to constantly in the back of my head put all these things that I've learned and we've discussed before I go into a conversation. You know, in the past, we've been through all different kinds of therapy, and not that any of it's good, bad, or indifferent, but every learning experience is good. But there I was told, you know, it's the words you use and how you use the words. And, you know, I would sit down and come up with this whole scenario of what to say with the right words, and it would still blow up in my face because I never was directed to, you know, feeling it or cutting the blame out. You know, no one else ever said to me, you know, stop blaming Maria. You know, it's always like, so how do you feel about that? I feel pissed off about that. So that's why I'm here. So with this, and I think I'm probably getting a little off course here, but it's just the constant thought pattern of she's not saying this to blame me or say I'm doing something wrong. She is saying this to help us through this situation. I just had a scenario when we got back from vacation after Christmas that we talked about in the group. And we were away for a week, we were at our daughter's house, and we just really didn't do much. So I was probably a little down and out. And I thought I did great from holidays in the past. I thought I did really, really good. And I come home and she has a discussion with me, that everyone was concerned that I wasn't really myself. And man, I took that to heart and my triggers kicked in and I was resentful of it because I thought I did so great and I'm being knocked down. And it took a day of me shutting down, listening to one of your podcasts and coming back and realizing, and also in the last group discussion we had, you mentioned, you're like, Dean, your face says everything. And it does. That's always been my point. If I'm pissed, if I'm happy, whatever, my face, there's no holds bar. And that really resonated with me too. Wow, I guess I did have resting bitch face that whole week. And I can understand how they thought it was so terrible. But, once again, without conversation about it, I didn't know I was really portraying it that way. And, they took it one way and the other. But reeling it back in, I was able to take all that and realize Maria wasn't like calling me out for being an asshole and ruining Christmas. She was just concerned about what brought me there. So after a day and all that, I was able to go to her and say, hey, I'm really sorry the way I reacted to that conversation. And she came back and she goes, it's just so nice that, you can do this and I feel safe talking to you. Even though it was a day of she was probably walking on eggshells, coming back and giving her that window that, hey, I thought about it and let's talk about it now.
Man, that's it's such it warms my heart because again, like I'll say this again and again and again. It's like I know the version of my queen, and it's like there's this part you get to the work and you get good at it. I'm like really good, fucking sensationally good compared to 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, sensationally good, and yet I fuck up constantly. And it's just that game of I call it like that refractory period. It's not my term, it's Joe Dispenza. It was like sort of like the refractory period between you lose consciousness, you go with old protective pathways of all blame, blah blah blah, I'm stonewalling, I'm grumpy, you gave me feedback, but I'm taking it as criticism, bitch, blah blah blah, like whatever the inner, and like maybe it spills into the out of our mouths. And but there's a refractory period. The work is I don't know, maybe enlightenment, whatever. There's no refractory period. You're just fucking omnipresent. I'm nowhere near that. But it's like bringing it from the moment of triggering to when can you wake up? And like shortening that distance. So, that's immense work because that was a day. I fucking know, Dean, when I look back and I'm smiling now, not to, if your queen is listening in or anybody's queens are listening in. It's not smiling and laughter like I don't give a fuck. I'm smiling and laughter because it's just like no shame and it's better to be playful. But it's like, oh my fucking God, like that I can look at you and go, man, that's immense progress. Like that's a day, maybe 24 hours, whatever it took you. And she was walking in eggshells. Man, there was 2 and 3 months. And I'd say technically some of those conversations was like my queen was like a decade or more. Going, I can't fucking talk to that. Anytime I talk to that, he goes into a such a shutdown. So it was almost like that, it's not that like conversation and then she came to full closure on it 2 or 3 months later. No, there was like this omnipresent fucking period where she was not safe. So yeah, man, your capacity, again, You're seven fucking meetings doing this. Again, there's this masculine part. It's like, oh yeah, well, it took me 24 hours. Like in the past, Dean, what were those refractory periods? You sort of mentioned a bit earlier on, but like how long was were these conflicts and this sort of righteous, you know, you caused me this pain and I just, how long was that period going on for?
It has gone on in the past for weeks, probably into months. And when it gets into the months, it's not the total not talking, it's the just existing and still in the back of my mind just being pissed off about it. Because I have a really bad trait, I think, in my mind, is I can forgive, but I never forget. And that's difficult to deal with because it's just always there. It'll flare back up. So, going down to a day is incredible because I could drag it on for forever until I feel satisfied that my needs were met my way is when I would finally let it go, which usually didn't happen.
Yeah, like that I speak it to guys like in the podcast, and of course there's marketing, and it's like trying to get, like, my worst case scenario is not divorce, it's that existing with that fucking resentment in the background for me. Like I'm like, I don't want to exist with my queen. It's either we're all fucking in, or let's just, we've had this conversation multiple times, like if we're gonna fucking do it, do it. Like it's like the podcast episode, remember, for setting up for the holidays. It's like that David Goggins, you know, ex Navy SEAL type wisdom. His thing was like, if you're going to go through the fucking door, go through the fucking door. Like as a Navy SEAL, I think I was using it like, if you're going to baste the turkey, baste the fucking turkey. But it's like, if you're going to do marriage, fucking do it. I the hell for me, it's not divorce. Hell for me is what, you know, those 12 years and like the further in that we were getting, it was that existing with all of that fucking resentment in the background. Like my queen feeling she couldn't speak to stuff, me feeling I can't speak to shit. We're together, we've got kids, we've a life, we built a sort of career together. Let's just exist. 'Cause why? Well, it beats the shit out of like having the fucking pain to just like end it and go out in the world again. I mean, that for me, I'm like, I'll pick divorce, and I'm not putting this forward to guys that divorce is a simple thing. It's not. But I feel like what you were saying there is like that background, it just was existing. You could go and just be there in that pocket for months and it, like longer with that just resentment eating away at the background. That for me is hell. It's like, what a horrible human existence.
Yeah, and you bring up divorce, so I was divorced. So yeah, it's not pretty, it's not happy. But also from that I've learned in this relationship, and yeah, I don't want to go there. And existing in a relationship is just, it's roommates. And we've been there, we've done that, we've had this conversation, We're just roommates. What are we doing this for? We either have to learn how to deal with this, or we're going to be roommates, or we're just going to end this and, go up our different ways. So yeah, we've had that conversation too. And both of us are vested enough that we know we love each other, and we love the kids and everything about what our relationship has come. But there's also the realization that it's work every single day. I remember being in therapy at one point and I said, why is this so difficult? If you love somebody, shouldn't it just be easy? And we're all put on this planet with the storybook life of, the perfect family with the picket fence and all that. And that's in the back of our mind that, it's out there and people do it. I mean, take social media for instance. You look at Billy posts this, this, and this, and his life is so fantastic. Oh my God, I want to be like Billy.
I fucking hate Billy too, man.
Right?
I fucking hate that Billy cunt. That's Billy's the reason I got off Facebook.
Exactly, man. So we put this persona in our head what's supposed to be. And, you know, I have a perfectionistic outlook on life, which I also realized it's not a bad thing. I mean, I used to think it was a bad thing at one point in my life. I also realize that perfectionism is in the eye of the beholder. So what I do perfect isn't necessarily what Maria does perfect, but I shouldn't judge her quality of perfection because that's her and that's her perfection. I can't put my levels on her. I mean, I don't know about your background, but I mean, if I had you over to my house to paint a room, are you going to do it as good as I'm going to do it? You know, to you, it might be like, yeah, that's perfect. That looks great. To me, it might be like, wow, Mark should stick to podcasts and not touch a paintbrush again.
There's two things I know. And this is like, there's a lot of private humor that there's two things I'm not going to do for you, Dean. I'm not going to paint your house. I'm not going to ask you for a cup of coffee. The second one is private. This first one is like, so I'm just learning this list, man. But I totally get you, man. It's like the perfectionist thing. Excuse me, I'm bringing in humor. You know me, I bring humor into all of it. Please go on.
Yeah, and it's just, we expect this. And what happens when you do that? You get disappointed. I mean, I could go back years when my kids were young. I used to take the week of Christmas off just because of work and to be with the kids. And I had 500 house projects in my mind that I was going to do that week. And, you know, that week would come and go and, you know, stuff with the kids and visiting family and da-da-da. Next thing you know, you're back to work and that stuff didn't get done. I felt like shit. I beat myself up. You know, I'm not good enough to do. I couldn't even find the time to do that. All this now relates into like a relationship. You know, I expect, you know, Maria to get up and get the duster and start vacuuming and have breakfast on the table for me and da 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 da. And if that doesn't happen, what happens? I'm disappointed. So we get these unclear expectations of what we think is perfect. And once you can put reality to it that, okay, this is what I do, this is what Maria does, and not judge her on her outcome and be able to, you know, go back and forth and understand each other. And once again, her not blaming me for taking an hour to clean the car before we have to go out to dinner. You know, just accepting someone for who they are and what they are.
Oh, and man, not that's putting
unreal expectations on something.
Yeah. I just, the way you brought that into landing there, you know, just loving a person for who they are. I'll give you an experience of that perfectionist part. I've got that sort of perfectionist part that I thought it was perfection. There's this obsessive part of mine where it's like, there's fucking high standards, man. Come on, come to it. I was like prickly in men's work when I was doing generic men's work. And that part actually was where what was birthed. That channeled, but me not projecting it onto guys, that channeled, I was like, okay, it has to be fucking heroic husbands, what is now called heroic husbands, men's circles, and my coaching. It's like, okay, cool. These dudes, they're coming in. They're not at a certain standard. Their marriage, their wife is giving them feedback. So the container is, I know at any given point, and this is a conscious thing, it's like if any guy gives me kickback, and it's like they will, and they have done, you have done, and every guy will, because that's just part of like, it's an uncomfortable part. But there had to be a container where guys knew that obsessive focus on taking extreme ownership is the only way out of it. It was only married men. Because I was noticing, it's like, fuck, I'm giving feedback to guys in general men's groups that I was leading and taking part in, and they could justifiably go, hey, man, well, that's fucking okay for you, but like, I'm fine with my stance. I had nothing to go on. Because why? The easy thing within Heroic Husbands is, okay, man, cool. You don't have to believe what I'm saying is true, or you don't have to go with this feedback. How's that working out for you and your marriage? Of course, it's the conversation ender. They're like, yeah, cool, man. I get your point. It's not.
Yeah.
How's that working out for you in your parenting? It's not. How's that working? It's like guys in the container of marriage have that perfect thing. So that obsessive part of my mind had to have a container where guys knew it was inherent. So it's safe for every guy in there. But to speak about expectations, I love one thing, Dean, in men's work. Again, it's masculine, you know, integrity with word. If I'm going to tell you I'm going to be there at the time, I'll fucking be there at the time. Or, you know, like if I say I'm going to get things in the Google document, again, guys listening in, I had this experience with the guys. I told them, okay, I'm going to have the stuff in the Google document for the mission quarter. I fucked up. I fucked up twice in not knowing how to do Google Docs. It was like pure schoolboy error, like twice or three times in a row. I come in, I apologize, I fucked up, guys, because why? I've said something, I want to be in integrity with it. I had a really funny experience with Matilda over the weekend. We are, off the back of, it's beautiful, and thank you, Dean, and the guys listening in. My financial situation is, you know, coming around. I've been committed to the podcast for like 2 years now, and the last 6 months has been beautiful. It's expanding that quickly that, hey, myself and Matilda can tend to stuff around the house that we couldn't before. So we're going through a long awaited kitchen upgrade. Been like, yeah, just been needed the last 5 years. But I think about, what was it? I think on the Friday, Dean, I'm speaking with Matilda. She's speaking about the floor. And it's like my level of, if you want to say, perfection, that part of my mind is like, okay, I'm going to really fucking listen into what you're saying. When you tell me where you're happy on, I lock in. Because why? You fucking told me I've locked in. It's in my library. I love you. So I'm going to go with that. Dean, by and large, what she said was, we've a 100-year-old Irish cottage. We have to upgrade it. So on the Friday, Matilda was, hey, Mark, you know, like, I'm going to like just bring him really concise. She's like, Mark, I know what I want for the floor here. I don't want any, you know, I don't want any laminated floor, like, or whatever. It's like, I want to have the floor, like the type of floor would have been like 100 years ago in an Irish cottage, you know, rock or stone. Mark, it'll cost a good bit more, but like, I want to have that. It's got to be fucking real, you know. She probably didn't curse. I'm adding in the curse. She's like, she was passionate. And I'm right there, Dean. I'm there going, cool, you know, perfect. I'm listening. I like this. It's clear. I've locked in. I learn whatever. You will have the perfect floor. So I'm like, wow, I've got absolute clarity from her, the type of floor. Like, I was thinking all of these whatever types of rocks, and I'd done a search on it. It came to the Saturday. We're in a big DIY store nearby, and she calls me down. Her face is lit up. And she's like, she points to tiles. She's like, they're perfect for the kitchen floor. Dean, I look at these tiles. These are not fucking, these are like the far end of the spectrum of what a fucking Irish cottage would have had 100 years ago. She's like, and she's in the car on the way home. I'm like, you're happy with them? She's like, they're the ones I've always been looking for. Dean, I burst out laughing because that part of you, you know, that perfectionist part, that would have got into like a day-long, fucking week-long argument with her.
Oh, yeah.
Because I would have felt hurt and rejected of, like, you fucking told me 24 hours ago this was the thing. Today is the polar opposite. It's like, no, it's not Irish. She's actually saying, hey, it's like Italian style. It's like me and my birthplace. It's like, okay, that's not a fucking Irish cottage. That ass old perfectionist part would have like assassinated what she was saying. Man, just the comfort to put that perfectionist part, that voice. And it was there. I was telling her, it's like, that part of me, baby, he's like I have to put him in a straitjacket. I have to fucking sedate him because it's hilarious. You have went to a total fucking different part of the universe today. But are you happy, baby? She's Mark. They're perfect. Nope. Case dismissed. That's it.
Yeah. Been there, done that. Totally know where you're going with that.
Have you, yeah, let us in on that. This is because this is classic. This whole topic, I laugh about it. I'm glad, but the first 12 years was fucking hell for me and for Matilda because I used to listen and lock in and then it would change and hell would happen. What's your version of that? I think every guy has this masculine, listen to the fucking words, lock in. Feminine, it's whatever, wherever the motion goes and feels right.
Yeah, and of course, with my, you know, perfectionism or OCDs or black and whiteness, you know, you tell me this, and that's what it is. And just like you were saying, you know, Maria would come up with something, and I would research it to the T of what she said, you know, and get all excited. I did all this work and then send her a picture. She's like, yeah, no, that's not what I want. This is what I want. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That is nowhere near what, you know, you tried to tell me you wanted. And, you know, we struggled a lot because Maria made a lot of sacrifices and moved into my house. So she had to give up a lot, her independence, her house, and come into my house. And in the beginning, I didn't think that was that big a deal, but it really was. And it took a lot for us to make it our house. And we're both very independent, alpha. She raised her girls. I raised my kids. You know, we did our thing. So it was very hard to blend together. You know, I think this wall should be blue. No, I think it should be green. I realized, luckily early on with that, she is awesome with colors. She can go in and look at a color and be like, that's the one we want. Where I might paint the wall five times before I finally come up with the color that I like. So it took a lot in me to, you know, do that same thing, put my perfectionism on a shelf and realize that, you know what? Maria knows what she's doing. I trust her. We're going to go with this. And we did. We just did a bathroom remodel and we went and picked out the tiles and all that kind of stuff just nauseates me. If I got to make a decision on something that's going to be in my house for 30 years, I could literally like want to throw up over it. And we went in the tile store and went from one end of the spectrum to the other, to this, to here's a little of my suggestion and blended it all together. And she picked out like amazing, you know, tiles. And years ago, I would have probably struggled with the fact of letting her have the final decision, but I did, and she loves it and it's awesome. And yeah, sometimes you just gotta put faith in the other person, and not get aggravated because you spent 12 hours researching what you thought she wanted and end up with something totally different. Just realize it's all part of the system. And it's nice actually to be able to sit back and have that trust and be like, well, that's the tile you want. Awesome. It's going to look great. And yeah. It's comforting.
Yeah. I loved the fact that you brought in your both alphas, because it's one thing that myself personally, I think is fucking bullshit. There's this idea that one has to take the lead and the other has to follow. And very often it's like, oh, masculine leads and feminine follows. And like, you can say that masculine, feminine cores are like one or other, but like, that's the way it is. It's like, that's fucking bullshit. Some humans like taking the following thing, and that's okay too. It's like specific leadership, conscious leadership. Yeah. Hey, we've seen one couple good number of years ago at this point, John and Missy Butcher, to do the life book online. They're like billionaires, super beautiful life, the homeschooler girls, travel around the world. It's like quite an amazing thing. Myself and Matilda have drawn a lot of inspiration from them. But their dynamic is very much just like, hey, she'll like follow John's lead. consciously. And they were beautiful because they were the first ones to give myself and Matilda like the permission that codependency is okay.
Mm.
They're like this super beautiful lifestyle, like living their life on their terms, like inarguably an amazing representation of like just living life to the full. They were like, hey, we're codependent. Yet there are people like myself and Matilda. Matilda's like, definitely, she's like, hey, I got a lead. That we were butting heads for this thing. It was sort of like, I take leadership and I was finding my voice. Matilda would like retreat to the background. It's like, okay, you lead. And then she had done it at certain parts. And then we could never find this part where, okay, we're both leading. We're both alphas. But your story there for me like represents the simplicity of it, of like there's times when, hey, the skill set, that exact point. I'm loving that yourself and myself, Dean, we're sharing the tiling thing. It's literally that point.
Yeah.
Literally in the story the other day, on the way back from it, you know, Matilda had asked me in the story, it's like, do you like the tiles? And what it was, and it's this awareness of my mind, you know, that part, like that part, that perfections part, my decision-making process. I was like, baby, I'm not yet ready. My mind is not ready. I'd be inauthentic to say to you, oh, I love them. It's like my mind doesn't have the capacity to project those into an integrated complete kitchen. And at this point go, yeah, I'm confident with that decision. I like, that's not going to arrive to me. So if I got into this conversation with you, it's like, I would probably have to try 5 different colors and matches to eventually develop the capacity to go, yeah, that's lovely. It's like, I just trust you. I don't have that capacity. I can't be that bold, but I've had enough experiences now that when she has taken the lead, it turns out beautifully. And I'm like, wow, I'm astonished by how her capacity to lead. And we do that in different moments. We're both alpha, but we both have different things that we're more comfortable leading, and it just finds this balance. Dean, I have a curiosity, like, it's, what are some of the explicit parts of, and you've mentioned them, Peter, throughout the conversation. What are some of the explicit benefits that after just 7 meetings, 2.25 months of this work, what are some of the explicit felt benefits that you're experiencing as a man, as a husband, relating with your queen? And what are some of the explicit felt benefits that if Maria was here, what would she be saying that you're experiencing as a direct result of doing this work? And like, you're on, because you're one thing I say to guys, I set the scene, but there's no fucking miracle in what I do. I set the container. You're doing the fucking work, man. You're doing the work. But off the back of the immense way that you're really attacking this, what are those benefits?
So, I mean, I got to say, for one, straight off the bat, you know, listening to your podcast, you know, just a lot of light bulbs went off and, you know, interesting. And, you know, when, I don't know, it was right before Christmas or something like that. I don't remember the time. You're like, oh, you know, join the men's group. And I kind of in the back of my mind had a little, you know, it's just another one of those gimmicks, another one of those things. But what do I have to lose? So click the link. And next thing I know, I'm set up with an appointment to talk to someone. I don't know who I'm going to talk to, but really in the back of my mind was just, you know, someone that works for this podcast that's going to interview me. And when I sat down and had the call and it was you, was like, oh shit, this is kind of like interesting. This is the dude that does the podcast that's actually talking to me. So I think right there just gave me this feeling of, wow, this guy really cares about what he's doing because he's here and it's not just a fly-by-night person. So then, you know, we get into the group and, you know, that was my main thing I wanted to do, was be in a group of other people. And I think I said to you, that's the route I want to go because I want to know, you know, what other people feel. and so many other things out there, you know, don't relate the way this does. So, you know, we've all had our meetings. We've had 7 meetings, and, you know, the guys that are there, I think I commented the other day, I consider them brothers now. Mm-hmm. Everything we talk about hits home. It puts one more thing on the shelf to use as a tool when something's going on. You know, before I was probably reactive. I think I brought it up before. I was told how to use my words and all that, but I didn't know how to feel what I was saying, even though, you know, Maria would try to bring out a lot of emotion in me and we'd try to talk about that. I think finally being with a group of guys that were all just real. And I don't know if we're just all to the point of throwing in the towel or fuck it, something's got to work. What's it going to be? But just the realism that's, you know, we're all the same. And not being that lone dude in my own room in my house when my other siblings have someone. And, you know, now there's these guys that we can relate to and talk and feel and understand that you're not alone in this. That, you know, my dealings with Maria now are, you know, not perfect, because as I've learned, perfection is something that is in the eye of the beholder, and, you know, nothing is ever going to be perfect. So I have to eliminate that expectation. And this has helped me do that. And, you know, Maria has said to me in the short amount of time that I've been doing this, the changes that she has seen. So this was one of my quotes in one of our meetings. This shit works. It's not, you know, hocus pocus. It's not bullshit. It's not anyone forcing you to do anything. It's not, you know, it's this way or the highway. It's just relatable. It's real. You know, in the beginning, and it's eased up a little bit. I mean, there was the fear of Mark. You know, you betraying us, you know, showing up to the meeting on time is for a reason. You're trying to show us to relate to our wives in a way that we're present. And, you know, you're not doing it to be a dick. You're doing it because that's something we all lack. You know, we have a conversation that has to do with feelings. What do? We get sidetracked. We'll go to our phone. We'll hope it rings. We'll do anything to get out of that conversation. But you've really bestowed in me how important it is to be focused and be there. And, you know, that just all makes a huge difference. And yeah, it's only been 7 meetings. And where I am in the U.S., it's 5 a.m. for me. And at times I get up and I dread, you know, I got to drag myself over and whatever. And God, we sit there and talk for 2 hours and it seemed like 2 minutes. And I wish it could go on for another 4. You know, there's so much that we all want to say and do and converse. But, you know, we're also connected. Where we communicate either voice messages or text messages to each other, and reach out at times of need. And we have an accountability partner that's just, you know, a weekly phone call to either be like, hey, how's it going? Or shit, I had a shitty week and I feel like this. And, you know, you have someone there to listen. And 90% of the time going through the same exact thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, out of all my years, out of all the things that I've done, this has really helped me the fastest in a short period of time. And with that, you know, I will definitely say, I can't put the expectation on it that I'm cured and my life is going to be perfect now. I know this is going to be work for the rest of my life. I mean, that's what a relationship is. But in this short period of time, this has given me so many tools to work with. And God, I look forward to doing it for a long time, man. I think it's amazing.
Dean, I'm so grateful. I will lead on a personal basis. Like I say to you guys in the group and that, I'm just a fucking regular dude. I'm a regular dude doing a regularly deep inner work, and I love your meaning that you tread into it. It's like you're not perfect, but you're in this for the long run. 'Cause it is the self-mastery. I'm fucking aligning my whole life around this, and I'm fucking up every day, every week, and I'm studying it and listening into to people. It's like it's self-mastery. It is self-mastery. It's that part of I've seen it. Like I know you're speaking to it, but every guy, you come to the work to save your marriage, but you really are just reconnecting with who the fuck you are, and like it's your whole life. It's your relationship with yourself, with your emotions, with your truth, and when you can stabilize that ship, funnily enough, your marriage turns around much better. 'Cause you're safer, you're not prickly, you're just loving and accepting yourself, and you're easier to relate with. You can love and accept your queen, your kids, your life. And I just like coming into Landing Dane, so much honoring, man. So much honoring, so much love for you. It's seven meetings, it's fucking spectacular. Where you have brought this work, it's one thing to say, to set the challenges, to set the container, man. But it's really such an honor and privilege to get on and witness your process on a weekly basis, hear your bed, like just where you're bringing the work, how your queen is responding, how you're fucking up but tidying up so impeccably, and just creating such trust and such safety for your queen, man. It's truly inspirational. And today for me to get this, like this is like an hour and a half window for me to just go, where the fuck is Dean at with this, man, and get to know you even deeper. It's such a beautiful experience for me. But I will say, on behalf of every guy listening in, thank you, thank you, thank you, because it takes immense courage for you to come into this container. And I know full well, every single guy listening in has taken like immense insights and courage to just fucking lean in. So yeah, man, thank you. And last but not least, most important person in the conversation, and I know I imagine she'd be listening in, all the queens listening to the conversations afterwards, fullest gratitude and appreciation to Maria for embodying such queenly goddess energy to challenging you, and like you're meeting the challenge. So yeah, we always bring that in Heroic Husbands. It's that king and queen beautiful dance, man. Much love.
Hey, I just want to throw back at you that I appreciate everything that you're doing, and how you say you're just a normal dude. You are 110%. It's not like Mark's in the group and the guys. It's Mark and the guys. There's nothing you portray or hold back that makes you different than any of us. You've been there, you've done that, and you're just real, man. And that's what really, resonates with me. And I gotta thank you, because without this, I definitely wouldn't have the tools that I need to make my relationship strong and last the duration. It's amazing, man. I can't say enough how much I appreciate this.
Hey man, re receiving those words with an open heart, really deeply meaningful for me. Dean, thanks so much for coming in, brother.
Hey, glad to be here, man.
So guys, coming into Landing, and like what a fucking example of profound courage, and yeah, just that courageous masculine heart warriorship, in Dean. I mean, you have it there, guys. Like I say, I'm a regular dude doing a regular deep inner work. You have it there. And Dean's an example, a regular dude, five and a half, almost 6 decades of, of wounding, of just growing up in profoundly sick society and all the conditioning, and yet within such a short period of time of his, you know, being a regular dude but willing to lean in, how far he's come, setting himself up for with a platform under his feet, under the, his marriage, his married life, and his whole life. That if he just keeps showing up, the foundation is there to play an infinite game. And his queen is feeling safe, seen, heard, himself as well. It's onwards and upwards. And hey, that's the reason why it's so beautiful to bring the marriage transformation heroes on board like Dean. Because if it's possible for him, it's cliched, but it's fucking true. If it's possible for Dean, if it's possible for Mark, if it's possible for all the guys that you will be hearing about coming on board, it doesn't fucking matter where you're at, man. You're 10 out of 10 up until this point. Hey, Dean will honor that. I will honor it. But if you're not playing with the full tool set, it does not make sense to lone wolf repeatedly doubling down, quadrupling down, magnifying your 10 out of 10. If it's not working, man, it takes 10 to 20 seconds. Make the call following Dean's courageous footsteps. And who fucking knows, in 3, 4, 5 months' time, you'll be sitting in Dean's seat today, declaring to the world what has been working so brilliantly for your marriage. I invite you, nay, masculine, I directly challenge you. Set up the application call now. In perfect alignment with the Mantra Offer movement, better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful kingly day. You've heard it. Lone wolfing does not work, period. Man, stop suffering and struggling unnecessarily in your inner world as you navigate your marriage and creating suffering around you. Book in the podcast description now. Book your application call right now. Best time to transform your marriage is 5 or 10 years ago. The only other tolerable time is now, today. Get in that link, book your call, and become the marriage transforming hero of your relationship in 2024.